CLS is go for main engine start.
Go at throttle up. Negative return. Then we see a nominal MECO. Welcome to space.
It's a big week, Jake.
It's a huge week.
Big week. We've got a friend, Tim Dodd, the everyday astronaut, here with us. How's it going?
Hey, it's going great. I'm not gonna lie. It's going great.
You had best week of us three, for sure.
Well, just because you guys weren't down there, yeah, but I'm not gonna lie and act like that was a walk in the park, though, either. I came home so sick because that was just, like, the no sleep, like, hot, just dehydrated, just
I feel
miserable.
So bad for you that you were in Florida at this time of the year.
I know.
I thought you were going to say, I came back so drunk, and then, like, still drunk.
No, I had to work hard. That stuff you guys know.
No, we're fake. This is our fake job. This isn't our real job.
You guys went down to Falcon Heavy.
Yeah, but we just drank. It was our fake job. We took days off of the real job to go down to it. Everybody was mad at us for that, but that's what it is.
Hey, I mean, in that case, it's really not too bad of a thing. I'm not going to lie. That would have been nice, but it's a lot of hard work. Like, there's a surprising amount of exhaustion that happens when you're just running back and forth, carrying all this gear, setting up the photographers that do this stuff. You know, I'm sure you guys follow like 90% of the photographers that are out there at every launch. You know, the John Krauses and the Trevor Malmans and the Bradys and the Craig and all those guys. You know, those guys, they work too hard. I'm just going to say it. They work too hard.
The nice thing for them, though, is they work too hard the day before, and then they just watch. And then they work really hard the day after.
You're right.
That's kind of a plus.
I kind of had the worst of both worlds, because I worked really hard to set up all those cameras. Also, we record some videos while we're setting up cameras, and then pull a live stream together, then tear down the cameras on no sleep. Like, it was, I need to learn how to just settle down and maybe do like one thing at once instead of 20, you know?
Yeah, we were playing around with live video earlier this afternoon, and I have so much more respect for what you do after today, because we couldn't do anything today. We were just stumbling. We had Twitch and Skype, and they were not talking, and now we're doing it audio.
Jake posted a great photo of the quality of video that we got streaming earlier. I don't know. We used to be, I feel like we did it a couple of weeks and it was really good. And then now I don't know what I did, but just take a look at that. I don't know what.
That's not a photograph. That's artwork.
That's the level of quality we were achieving today.
I'll make it the
album art right now so that people can enjoy why they're paying good money, which is no money, for this audio experience right now. And you should be glad for it. It does look like one of those AI things where you type in like podcaster and it makes what it thinks a podcaster looks like.
You're right. And let me apologize too. Normally I like fancy mic work, so we're just doing like computer microphone. I hope it sounds okay.
You sound great.
Let me apologize to your listeners, though, that, you know, I come in here. I'm sorry, listeners, that you are having a subpar experience. And also, while I'm ranting, Mass Fraction, I believe that is the, they have that one SSTO that's super wacky. Mm-hmm. What was
DCX.
That again? The DCX as a profile. I love that. Oh, man, yeah, that is cool.
My dream podcast is to find one of the people that currently works for Blue Origin that worked on DCX, because there are a couple of those unicorns that exist in the world, and I have not yet been able to get in touch with them. So if you know that person, please email me or something.
Or if you're listening and you are that person.
Or you are that person, yeah. I didn't figure that was super likely, but... Tim, what are you drinking over there? I saw you got something cooking.
This is some Macallan 12-year, a little scotch. Ooh.
12-year, you know, as long as the Orion parachutes have been in testing. Nah, I think it's even. I think that's even low, honestly.
Wow, I thought that at first it was like laughing is like, haha, that's a. And then I'm like, you're actually right. That's like factually, I think you're correct.
I think I'm low.
Wow.
Anyway, is that like a go-to like of yours?
Those parachutes are aged well. What was that?
Is that like a go-to? Is that like
it's fancy stuff, because it's. I figured it would be a nice night to enjoy with my friends instead of just,
here.
Normally I'm not gonna lie, Evan Williams, it's like the cheapest, dirtiest whiskey is my, that's my go-to.
Problem is, I was like, oh, the founder of Twitter. And no.
Wait, his name's Evan Williams is the mm-hmm. founder of Twitter?
Yep.
No.
Well, one of them.
Do you
Twitter,
think
blogger. You think it's you him? Think you think he licensed his name for this whiskey?
I mean, it didn't have any name recognition for me, but do you think there's still a crossover there? That's... Oh, Chase says that.
Chase, go investigate that. See if at Ev is from where you're from.
Go knock on the door of Evan Williams if it's close to where you live and ask if he's the guy that started Twitter.
Are you the guy that made Twitter?
Yeah, because there's no one named Evan Williams more than twice. Like, come on.
Definitely not.
Jake, what do you got over there?
So I really wanted to go find a beer that had a dragon on the label, and I was unsuccessful. So I got the next best thing, and this is Space Goat.
Ooh. Wow.
That is an amazing.
Wow. Ooh, an oat pale. I can't do pale ales, but I like oats.
Yeah, dry hopped oat pale ale from Phillips Brewing and Malting Company. And this is uncharacteristic.
Wait, so last
I mean,
week,
this
last
is
time
a can.
You were talking about the malt liquor thing. What was that beer that you brought up last time that wasn't actually beer? But you're talking about like whatever you drank when you were a kid, and it didn't even say beer on it; just said like malt.
Oh
something.
Yeah, the Big Bear, the malt
Big Bear.
Beverage.
Yeah, so yeah, is this like the upgrade of that?
I don't know, man. Oh yeah, there's the emoji of me. But yeah, this is a can. I don't usually drink out of cans, but you know, we'll give it a go today. It's something new for me. What do you got, Anthony?
Okay, so you may think, oh, just another local Philadelphia area beer, but let me explain the layers of the onion here. This is the Victory homegrown lager. So I thought, oh, like a homegrown thing, you know, Dragon 2, homegrown spacecraft. But then you look on the side of the can, and this is a can that JB himself would be very proud of, because this talks about the American hops that were made to brew this American beer in American soil. And I felt that was a very fitting beer for now, and something that JB could be proud of. Right as I said that, the whole Skype froze. So I don't know if you found that amusing or not.
Heard it. We loved it.
Okay, loved it.
That was great.
Just check.
Yeah.
I wanted the listeners out there to know that that was just not completely flat with you two. So.
But our reactions were of wonder and awe and hysteria.
I'll put in like some crowd sounds or something after the fact.
Yeah, all the laughter was just stuck in my throat. It was just coming out too fast.
It hit hypersonic velocities. Throat nozzle diameter was just perfect for it. So, yeah, you know, all that stuff.
So where are we starting with this? There's a lot to talk about.
Well,
you guys do it. I'll sit here.
Okay, well, Tim, you got to go. So we did not go, but you did go to see. So Anthony said it was a busy week, huge week. Crew Dragon in like one nice bookended week was like launch and docking and stuff and landings and parachutes, and it's all done now.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Why don't you just kick us off, Tim, with like, what was your takeaway from the trip? Like specifically the go to Florida. What did you come away with? You know, being on site for that.
It was the 2:49 a.m. thing was a little rough. And I love that we heard, I saw, you know, there's of course so many Twitter comments and people being like, don't they know anything about PR and like how to strum up like a mission? It's like there's some more important things than having like a high view count on your live stream when you're taking something to the International Space
Quick
Station.
Quick pause.
Yes.
Flashback to February last year.
I know
waiting.
Exactly where you're going with this.
Oh no,
yeah.
I was gonna have you tell most of this, Jake. Because we're sitting there. Tim, I don't know if you know about the Falcon Heavy. This was a great week. Okay. But the week of Falcon Heavy was literally the best week I will ever have in my life, because it was bookended with the Eagles winning the Super Bowl, Falcon Heavy, and me flying back in time for the Super Bowl parade. Okay? So this was a high intensity week. That needed to launch that day, or I was not seeing it because I was not gonna miss the parade. Or I was gonna miss the parade and the, you know, whole thing.
Yeah.
So we're sitting there sweating bullets that this thing's drifting through the launch window hour by hour. And then at one point, it was like, I think it was the window was what, 1 to 4, something like that, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. And we're like halfway through it. And I looked at Jake and I said, what's the chances that everything's totally fine and they're waiting to get to the crescendo of this thing to the end of the window when more people are watching? And Jake was like, just like a totally like weird, like nondescript facial expression.
A non-zero chance.
Yeah. So that's you know, I'm just saying that there may be, this was not one of those circumstances, but
yeah,
I don't think it's beyond them. So that's that's my conspiracy theory.
I don't think it'd be beyond like SpaceX. They're all about the showmanship, you know, and like the showing off a little bit.
This one was not that at all.
This couldn't have been like just physically, unless you're an Atlas and you have like a 40-minute window or whatever, because dog legs or whatever. But yeah, this so that kind of did suck. Like that is smack in the middle of the night. Say it's like 11 p.m., not as big of a deal. Say it's like 6 a.m., at least you can like go to bed and wake up really early. Like 2:49 is like the worst circumstance for this, really. That was rough, but it was a crystal clear night, like really clear. If you saw shots from people from like the VAB even, and shots, even though like the ground was super wet, but I think maybe the humidity came out of the air already. So the line of sight, like to the rocket was, oh, beautiful. So this was only my second night launch that I've seen. I guess I went to one in Vandenberg and just saw fog, of course. So I don't think I saw that one. I kind of heard a little bit and saw a little bit of an orange sky for a second. So this was really like only the second launch I've seen at night, and it was just, oh, so pretty. So that was great. Yeah, it's fun too. The press site has been changing a lot. Like the attitude at the press site and of the members of the press has changed a lot since I've been going there for about 5 years now. And, it went from like, no offense to some of the people that were there during the shuttle era, but it went from like crusty, old sad people that were sad that the space shuttle's gone and they have nothing left to like now they've all kind of weaned out and like given up and ran out of energy, and now it's all like young like people that are excited, and so it's just like the energy is different. Everyone's hanging out, people are like hanging out before and afterwards a little bit. It's just like you know, community's growing around there, so that's fun. I don't know, it's just it was good. It's good that it was good, because I have a lot of launches I'm going to try to see this year, a lot of launches.
Like, was that crowd-wise, do you think it was a, on the spectrum from, like, regular CRS mission to Falcon Heavy, where was it in that, like, both in terms of, like, people there, the amount of people there, and the excitement level?
I think we can measure that in buses, like, the actual amount of, like, press buses going out to the like, pad and stuff. I think this one had four buses, kind of four and a half, because they had, like, a little one, too, on the first day. And Falcon Heavy had like eight, and a normal CRS mission has about two. So I think it was about twice as busy as a normal CRS mission, half as busy as Falcon Heavy still, I think. And that's about what it felt like too. Like the press site wasn't swamped, you know, there's a healthy amount of press there. But like the major, you know, all the major networks and stuff did represent there, which is really cool. You know, you had like ABC and NBC and CBS, all those people. So that's always fun when they show up and they're excited. It was a good sign though. Like the excitement level was just like people were, it didn't seem like that big of a deal. I think people were just ready for it. You know what I mean? Like the feeling was like, let's get this thing going, cause we're ready to fly crew now. And NASA feels that, like when you hear, you know, when you heard Bridenstine and some of the other people talking beforehand and stuff, everyone's like, let's get this going. You know, we're really excited. And seeing even, what's his name?
Gerst.
Yeah.
He was laughing. Yeah. Like, I didn't know he could laugh.
Me either. Like, just seeing people actually excited about this was just very positive. You know, it's exciting. So, yeah, it wasn't like crazy hype, like Falcon Heavy. It wasn't anything like that. But I think DM1 or DM2, I mean, sorry, will have like a substantial.
It's gonna be a total circus for sure.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, we're thinking of maybe doing that one, and it's, you know, I mean, it's a moving target, just like Falcon Heavy was. Falcon Heavy's timeline ridiculous trying to book flights, but yeah, we're gonna try and hit that one, I think. So that's cool. Well,
and now you know why I tend to drive,
like, yeah,
not only like gear and stuff, but just like, you know, it's such a moving target that like until you're about 4 or 5 days away, you're just not sure. You know, like that's the reality of it. Like, you know, if you're 2 weeks out, sure, you can maybe have a decent guess, but I don't leave the car until there's been a static, like, I don't consider getting in the car until there's been static fire, and normally that's 3 days away or so. So
if I waited that far, I wouldn't make it in time by driving.
Where do you live again? You're in Camdanana, right?
Yeah, in Vancouver, so it's just draw a diagonal line across North America and hit the other
basically
water.
Basically the eclipse line.
Yeah. That'd be like a 48-hour drive or something, I feel like.
I wouldn't do it. Yeah, that's too far. Yeah. So I've crossed Canada before in a car, and it's like too long.
And this is like the ultimate like first world problems, and like I shouldn't be complaining, but I did take the Tesla down there, and that added substantial seat time, unfortunately, because it's cold. The way back, I had a headwind. That stuff really affected the range. In general, like it's a pleasure to road trip, and it's a great car to be sitting. It's a great place to be. And especially when it like drives itself for the most part on the interstate. Right. Like that's nice.
You get a little bit of time back.
Yeah. but this definitely pushed it to the limit. It added a good 25% of amount of time. So that wasn't ideal, but maybe, you know, they just announced totally off topic now. They did announce like faster superchargers and stuff that they're going to start rolling out this year. So hopefully when those start happening, that'll make up for it, you know? My bad, though.
Yeah, you know, so I wanted to talk, like, is anyone else shocked? I don't know if shocked's the right word, but I'm kind of shocked, like, how flawlessly this whole thing went. Like, for a first-time spacecraft, like, I was expecting way more headaches. Like, I was expecting them to pull through, but I expected there to be a little bit of hiccups. But like instantaneous launch window, so they just kind of had to nail it, and they just did. I don't know. I thought that was really impressive and not what I expected.
It also helps for that to be the first commercial crew mission that happens is huge for NASA and SpaceX and everyone involved, because it's just like, if there would have been a lot of issues on this, or even just like little headaches or delays, that would have been something that would come up in future like congressional hearings and all this other stuff that would make headaches.
Yeah,
but the fact that this was like so professional through and through, and just like, oh, we're just doing business here, we're gonna just do the mission real quick, like boom bang bing, week in week out, we're back, everything's good, we'll see in a couple months for the abort test, that is amazing. It's so big
It almost makes like breathing room for Boeing, like Boeing can make a couple screw ups now and like the overall program's okay, you know.
I have to say that, you know, it was probably 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that everyone, I think, was kind of doubting the Falcon 9 being able to be reliable on time with the super chill propellants, you know, especially, you know, that OG2 first mission. And then, like, I think, like, SES-9, I think, scrubbed, like, 4 or 5 times or something, like,
they did have a lot of big teething issues with that.
Yes, right. And I remember sitting there questioning, like, how are they going to do instantaneous launch windows with this thing? How are they going to be reliable? You know, and here we are. The Falcon 9 was definitely not the concern on this mission, you know. I too assumed that, like, you know, it's a new spacecraft. Like, they're going to have something that they're going to have to scrub for. Something, you know, pop up when it's on the pad and they're powering up and like, oh, a sensor error or something, you know. But nothing. Like, didn't hear, you know, because they had that flight readiness review about a week ahead of time. And they're like, they were fueled up even. Like, we're ready to go. A week ahead, like, dang. But also, you know what I think some of it is? I think the government shut down. I think that allowed enough time for SpaceX to literally have the thing ready to go. As soon as they were opened back up and everything, they could just be like, here you go, boop. Like, I think if they were still trying to work against that, you know, I think we maybe would have potentially seen some of those problems crop up.
That's 35 extra days of QA.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I think that helped, because I think otherwise we probably would have seen some slips and dates of like, well, we're aiming for this. Oh, well, hold on. We got to, you know.
And we did sort of, because they were talking about, oh, well, we might fit it in if the shutdown doesn't happen, this and that. And then it was like, oh, okay, we'll see you back whenever y'all sort that out. So it was definitely like a month of time where they just punted on that.
Yeah. And that's probably exactly what it needed to make it just the flawless mission that it was, you know. Yeah, but that's great. I'm so excited that NASA's excited about it. You can tell how tightly they're trying to brand themselves and like, which they should, as a communicator and as, you know, I think those of us that understand the relationship between NASA and SpaceX, I'm glad that they're, you know, co-broadcasting on SpaceX's live streams, making darn well sure everyone understands these are high-end NASA missions. It's, you know, NASA's the reason why this is all happening now. And, you know, because I think a lot of people still do the old NASA versus SpaceX thing, which is just so, so frustrating to me.
Yeah. Yeah, but actually, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I thought it was really interesting, you know. So if you think back to like, just think of NASA TV coverage for the last, call it, I don't know, even 10 years. And then That's kind of the standard. That's the benchmark of what we kind of think of as the best, you know, live coverage of a space event. Like, oh, you just go to NASA TV, they'll have everything. That's what we get to watch as civilians, right? Mm-hmm. And then SpaceX comes on the scene and they start this live stream thing that they do, and it's totally different. They have their own style. And then, you know, how many of those streams have we all watched where we're just like, yeah, I'm going to watch another launch and landing today, and now I'm like zeroed in, and it's become normal to us. But this is the first time, like, those paths have been diverging for all these years. And this is the first time that just kind of like all came back together. And this, like, I felt it was like almost a little like tense trying to like blend these streams back together.
Especially
where they
when
diverged
you had the
so
NASA
long.
Guy like on location in Hawthorne. You had Dan Hewitt or whatever his name was, where he's very buttoned up. And like that, you could tell the first couple of streams they were having like to figure out the chemistry between everybody. Like, oh no, we're the super lax webcast. We're the very tight and tidy one, and it's like a lot of feeling
and
out.
It was just like pulling back and forth, and I just I was like, this is bizarre. Like,
and even by the splashdown, like Dan's, I felt like Dan's like attitude or like person, because I actually know him. He happened to give me my first tour of Johnson Space Center. Like, super nice guy, crazy nice guy. He changed quite a bit from like way more buttoned up during the launch by splashdown. Like, I wonder if they almost had a little like, let's keep working on it, you know, like, so they're closer mesh together, because I felt like it was way more natural. They're way more casually talking too, which was, well, then again, it is splashdown. There's so much just like dead air of like,
there's a lot.
Here it comes for 30 minutes. Now we're going to be,
up the burn, you know, started. It's, we got to stand here for 15 minutes while it happens, and then we'll let you know if it worked.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think some of that too, it's just like, there was more breathing room for them to be able to like casually chit chat. But my friends that do the like webcast for SpaceX, I think they were pulling their hair out while they were working to like work with NASA on that. Like, I can't imagine having to now deal with two communication departments, two, like, you know, here's what we're going to say, like two people wanting to fit their scripts in, two, like, oh, no,
yeah, I mean,
thank
as
you.
We said, we can't even get a single stream going, so that's just way beyond me at this point.
I'm glad.
I thought it was so just like, and I think it'll get better. I think as they start to feel themselves out a little bit, and they'll like, okay, this is how NASA can look good on a SpaceX stream, and how SpaceX can look good on a NASA stream, and it's gonna get better. Just this first one felt super awkward, you know, because they like, you'd have these, like, the SpaceX is very like, you know, they don't have, you know, dedicated faces. They're just engineers that can kind of dual role, and so it's very authentic and kind of laid back, whereas NASA tends to like find faces, right? Like, you're a professional face and a talker, and that's your job, which has pros and cons. And so it's just like the bounce back and forth to that was just like, here's this very polished, square-jawed, handsome man who's going to provide coverage of the launch, and then and then it's just like, you know, dude in a hoodie is like, yo, I built this right here. Like, flying. I'm pretty excited about it because I made it and now it's in space. Like,
It's true. I think like, I'm not a big fan of constantly like jumping to different, now so-and-so is going to be on location to tell us all about what it's like to be at the Banana Creek Saturn V Field of Heat Center. Like, I'm here standing here with hundreds of people, you know, or whatever. Like, that feels very old school to me. I would love if they like basically just followed SpaceX's live stream format, you know, maybe had their one, throw one thing to one of their engineers or something, and just kept it like nice and short and simple and sweet. And I would like if that would happen. But.
Well, and it's funny because like, that's not, we shouldn't just call this the NASA style, because it's actually kind of like the KSC style. Because like, if you go to JPL, it's not like that, right? So it's interesting to see that it's like specifically that old like crusty human space flight format.
It's really thing. It's the Cronkite.
Yeah,
everybody wants to be Walter Cronkite for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Because even like if you think about the InSight landing coverage, which I thought was really really good, they just had, you know, they had one moderator and she was just bringing on the experts and they were right in the room there, so it felt like real. And you know, you had these real engineers who are trying to talk and do the job of communicating, but they're so like, you could tell they're like, I just want to leave this desk and go look at that terminal over there, cause there's some shit going on that I want to see. But like, so that kind of added that authenticity to it. Whereas, I don't know. I don't like the talking heads, I guess.
I'm very curious to see what the Boeing thing is going to be like, because ULA does webcasts for their launches. So hypothetically, they could use the ULA team for the launch, which has been getting better. But yeah, Boeing, like, when's the last time you've seen a Boeing webcast?
I still hope it's just going to be like 48 white guys in military uniforms.
It's either going to be that or like every like airplane safety video you've seen. I'm just going to get the people out of that section.
Or they're going to do like, you know, when you fly, sometimes they have like a cool person, like a group or something doing like a one person, one take shot or something. Or something's going to do the webcast or something. Because they're just like, we don't know.
I'm game for that. That sounds better than anything else I was thinking about.
But I'm wondering, I wouldn't be surprised if Boeing almost just defaults to NASA.
Yeah, that was my assumption as well.
Basically, just is like, here, you guys run your live stream. We'll provide some
especially because I know that there is a separate mission control in Houston that Boeing is going to use for their missions. So they're inside JSC for that. So that's they're even taking that way out on the control center thing. So I assume that they would do that on the webcast as well.
But they're not flying anything else on their own, especially nothing that they like webcast.
Yeah, nothing. Yeah. So I don't think they've ever had a live stream on the internet.
But you know what? This is also a ULA launch. So why couldn't they might default to ULA and have ULA tie in with.
Yeah. They own half of it anyway.
Yeah.
Just have the accountants figure out how the money works and make sure it all checks out and they're good to go.
Well, like, I wonder, you know, is that in the contract to provide communication services as part of the launch? Like, I wonder if that's part of it.
I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe, right?
Yeah.
Or is it like,
in this day and age, it might be, because it is very important.
And it could just be, well, the other side would be that NASA would be like, listen, we got it, we'll do it, no problem. But SpaceX is like, no, we'll take the extra cost because we want to insert ourselves into what you're doing, right? Like, that could be the way too. Whereas Boeing's like, yeah, you got it, you're fine. Like,
yeah.
Or Boeing's got to start something and get practicing, because it's only like 7 or 8 years for SLS flies. So we got to make sure we have, they're going to want to cover that one too, right? Prime contractor, right? No. I'm just kidding.
Maybe Lockheed Martin's going to need to step that game up, because,
what
you know,
is this?
Orion capsule.
What is this? Somebody found a Facebook Live video from Boeing? This looks accurate. This looks pretty much like we assumed.
No, I don't want to watch that.
Yeah. Let me describe it. You have, I'm not going to say geriatric, but a stereotypical, you know, 65-year-old white male.
That's generous.
With a
72
with a sport coat. I actually would probably really like this guy. So this is nothing against the guy. It's about the choice of having like a old sports broadcaster, with a purple turtleneck, introducing your spacecraft or whatever, or your LOX tanks or whatever they're looking at. I don't even know what they're looking at here.
I believe that's composite the inside wing of a 777.
Or a 787 maybe even. Oh, that's probably triple, isn't it?
That's pretty big.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Man, I'm going to definitely make that the album art right now, because everybody needs to see that.
Yeah. Can the title of this one just be Boeing Livestream?
No, I'm actually writing down a couple titles right now. First option, I'm not going to say geriatric, but ... And the other one is an old sportscaster with a purple turtleneck.
There we go. There we go.
We've got some.
I like that.
Yeah. So that note is off to a good start.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, though, I would like to talk to this guy.
I think we should have him on the show.
A thumbnail of him. Yeah. I bet he would come on.
We've got a knack for this, Jake.
Already got Gary. We gotta provide, you know, balanced approach to the old space guys, right? So
I bet Gary from Lockheed could put us in touch with this guy.
Yeah. He probably knows him. Yeah.
I'm going to send him a note right now.
It's Larry from Boeing.
Larry from Boeing.
That sounds right. Sounds and looks right. I love it. Oh, yeah. Then there's that old character. Who was that? Will Ferrell's character. What was the character's name? Harry Carey. There we go. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't a character. He was portraying Harry Carey. That's great. I don't know if you guys remember that.
I don't know that one.
If the moon was made of cheese, would you eat it?
Oh, okay. Now I understand that reference, but the GIF did not do it for me.
Especially because it's just static for me, so it's just a picture.
Oh, man.
Oh.
Okay, I need your help. I need your help here. I need your
mine?
Both of you. This is like, okay. I've had serious issues lately. Okay. We got this whole thing going on where like certain senators want to extend ISS till 2030. And that's a thing that we have to figure out. So up until now, I've mostly thought like, let's sink the ISS as quick as possible so we can get like move on to another thing here because I feel like we need to. But lately, I'm feeling like I don't see a lot of productivity happening in the other thing. So maybe we should just keep this one rolling for a while if this is the best we can get. And I can't figure out which side of my brain is going to win this fight. So like, where are we at right now? Where do you two lie on this ISS thing? Keep it to 2030, sink it in 2024. What do we got?
Jake, take it. I want to hear you. I want to build off your success.
Start with the reasonable one.
But this is where I'm actually kind of radical.
Oh.
Yeah. I think the ISS needs to go.
Sink it? Sink, yeah. Hashtag sink the ISS. And, we're going to start
and
that.
And that's not because it's not because they don't do good work. It's
sell
because
it to Canada. We could attach so many arms to this thing.
Hey, Canada can't afford that, man. We just had a $2 billion space program announcement over like
our
by
lifetime.
The time the space program cost timeline is done, I'll be retired. Like literally, it was like it was $2 billion over 24 years. Who makes a policy like that?
Oh man. Yeah.
Anyway, why do you want to sink the ISS, Jake?
I think it's really old and it isn't doing anything else that we need right now. The technology on it is not like we've eked out every amount of knowledge from the engineering side of it that we can, and we need to try something different. Like the astronauts go up there and they spend, I don't know the exact number, but I wouldn't be surprised if you told me it was 60 to 80% of their workday making sure it doesn't break. Like it's like they're cleaning mold off the walls, they're fixing the CO2 scrubber, they're checking for ammonia leaks. They're just like it kind of like barely holds together because there's really talented people on board. Mm. And so I'm not necessarily
saying that's
a really
good way to phrase that. Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's like I don't care what you do with the money, but I think that's the one that's a bit of a sink. And now, I mean, you've got a good point as to what would happen if we canceled it without a plan. But anyway, radical.
You just put that so like it literally takes like the 30 smartest people we have in the world, 80% of all of their day to keep the thing together. That putting it that way makes me a lot more sad than I was right before this segment.
Oh, that puts me in a funny position because in general, like, I'm only recently having an appreciation for the ISS that, like, I definitely didn't have 5 years ago. You know what I mean? And there's some things on it that are valuable in space because they're already there. You know, like tools and, you know, I mean, even, like, those solar panels. Like, we have to refly solar panels. We have to refly, like, a lot of systems. I would... But then again, like, okay, I'm going to go full circle.
Hey, man, I told you, I'm all conflicted over here, too, so I assume we got to work through this.
Because, like, you don't want to pull SLS and say, like, hey, we already have engines. We already pretty much know, like, solid rocket boost. We have half the rocket done. And then, like, come to find out, wait, it's actually really hard to design around something that you're just, like, scrapping together from leftovers as opposed to just starting new. So maybe it's not smart to be like, I know, we'll just send up a vehicle that doesn't exist to disassemble the ISS, the parts we like, and attach them to something. Like, that's probably really stupid. And maybe at this point, but there is so much, like, scientific value. I think the mechanism that is the ISS is a mess, and it sucks, and it's cobbled together. But there's a lot of really good instrumentations on board, a lot of really valuable parts and pieces that are need to be in space, you know? And if you're to relaunch something like, say, four, like, BA-330s or something, to stuff them full of the instrumentations and the things that would need to replace the ISS would still be a massive, massive undertaking. So it's really hard because I think we need to keep the ISS until our scale of what is big in space changes. Like, until we have something bigger than what the space shuttle was capable of, you know, say a Starship, something that can all of a sudden take up a 9-meter diameter payload for way cheaper, and all of a sudden the thought of building something like the ISS is laughable. Like, we could do that 2 launches, you know, for $100 million or whatever, you know? Then I think we should definitely look into like a proper replacement. But until then, I don't think we actually have a valid solution to building anything substantially better than the ISS. And I don't think Lunar Orbital Platform Gateway or whatever it is. Like, I see that as a jobs program for the SLS at this point.
Yeah. That's a good point too. You're not wrong. So it's not a one answer problem. That's the thing.
Well, and I think the big thing is we're at this funny crossover where the ISS is on its way out. Like, it's dying. It's old. It takes a lot of maintenance, but we're not at the point where we're massive payloads that could easily replace it. You know, there's always going to be a crossover where, like, say we did send up a replacement in 5 years on the technology we have right now, the rockets we have right now, and probably be like, dang, that was barely worth it. Like, we have this new system. But then, like, maybe 5 years after that, doing that exact same thing could be 10 times cheaper. So there's just this, like, awkward crossover where, we should just wait until we have it to be cheap enough to be able to replace it with something worthwhile.
Until it's, like, really obvious that we can do it better. It almost reminds me of that Bill Gates quote of, like, we overestimate the amount of change that happens in 2 years, but underestimate the amount that happens in five, where it's, like, this very slow creep, and maybe we're still in that intermittent phase where it's, like, we clearly see the trend lines, but we don't yet have the hard and fast results from it. Okay, so maybe I'm being a little antsy. I don't know.
The linear, we all think linearly, you know, and Elon mentioned that when talking, I think, about ramping up production in the Model 3, how hard it is to predict, you know, like, people are like, when are you going to hit 50,000 cars? And that could be off by, like, you know, 1 month, you might be, like, so under 50,000, and then, like, the next month, because it's, like, exponential, you could be like, oh, we're at 100,000 now. You know what I mean? Whereas, like, we went from producing 10,000 to producing 100,000 in a tiny scale of window here. But that whole, you know, because it's exponential, like, just really hard to predict that ramp, you know? And you might be in those first little bits. Where it's
treading water. You think, like, this is the fastest trend line that we have, but we could be just barely hitting the curve.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think as, like, Blue Origin and stuff comes online with new systems, I think we're coming on a new era where we're, like, going to be like, okay, this is it, finally.
Yeah. I don't know. It's, like, it's such a struggle because there's not one reason to have the ISS. There's, like, 12, and some of them are good and some of them are bad. And depending on which reasons are important to you, you'll have a different opinion on it. Like, if your only reason is you want to maintain the workforce that can operate a vehicle like that, you're just like, yeah, keep it going as long as possible until something is already in place. If your reason is specifically like microgravity research, it's probably not that good because the group that manages that is pretty incompetent. Like, the output is not very efficient. I'm going to get emails for that one probably.
Yeah, but, you are. I know precisely who you're going to get them from as well, because I've gotten those emails.
I'll just send the report back to them.
But ask them if they know Larry from Boeing.
Yeah, just Larry from Boeing.
Just see if you can find a way into
it. There you go.
Yeah. And so it, depending on how you come at the problem, you'll have a really different perspective. And it kind of comes back to my recurring theme that I always harp on is nobody can answer me why we want to send people to space in a, like, really succinct and universally accepted reason. Everyone's kind of like, oh, well, it's because of this. And it's like, well, that's not enough to get the funding that it's getting. So think bigger or come up with some sort of,
yeah,
you gotta glom up all these kind of reasons and hope that they convince someone. Right. And so
I thought you were over this. I thought you were through that phase of your life.
Well, I'm through it, but I've accepted it into my life.
You just made your peace with it.
Yeah. It's like, that's just how it is now, you know, but.
So the thing that I always said about the ISS was that its best legacy is going to be the fact that it created this phase of the economy that we're in right now, where you've got the SpaceX's and you've got, like, the new arm of the orbitals and Northrop Grumman's, and you've got Sierra Nevada doing interesting things with Dream Chaser. There's all of these things that are coming out of it as an integral part to the program right now, but if you ask the people at the start, this is, like, a total side effect. So in that way, it's like, I don't know, when we're just getting started with crewed flights for these companies, I'm like, I think 11 years of ISS, like, 11 more years is crazy. But then at the same time, I'm like, 11 years for other people to figure out side projects they could work on that have a thing in the ISS and it turns into something else. And like the amount of chaos theory that goes into that, but having all of this like interesting stuff happen in the cargo world the last couple of years, and now we're going to have that in crew. I don't know. I'm starting to get a little bit more hopeful on that side of things, especially as we continue to see all the gateway stuff. We're not getting as much funding in the budgets as people expected there to be, and it just seeming like another one of those things, another one of those projects that will go down in the space history books. But I don't know.
Yeah,
I guess keep it flying.
And it's like, well, one of the other reasons to say extended is like, if you end it in 2024, is that where it is right now, 2024? Let's say you end it there. Like, have you earned your money back as a government on the investment?
No, we're never going to do that.
Commercial
Come
crew?
On.
Like, right. Like, you know?
On commercial crew.
Yeah, on commercial crew. Like, you put all this money in, so you have this ride to space, and then you only use it for, like, you know, 5 years. Like,
Jake, I don't know. I know you live in Canada. We don't often earn our money back on things down here. It's not really our style lately. I don't know if you checked that national debt clock of ours, but we don't really. It's not our style.
Can you imagine them in, like, 1985 being like, well, Shuttle had a good run, but we're moving on. Like,
yeah. I mean, Challenger almost...
That's true.
Question the program. Like, can you imagine Challenger having to, like, well, this ain't looking so good.
Yeah. Put Columbia in a museum and move on to the next. Yeah. No.
Man, Dang. How about that alternate history?
Yeah.
Oh, man, there's so many good books that could be written about alternate histories. I mean, like the Gemini Mole program.
Yeah, like, we were talking about that today in the Discord.
Dude. And, like, the no human is polar orbited.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
that's
crazy, sucks.
Right? It's weird. And we had Slick Six, which is 66E, which is out in Vandenberg, and that's where the Delta IV and Delta IV Heavy launches for ULA now. But it was supposed to do the a Titan IV Heavy or something with a Gemini B on it. And then that got scrapped, and then the space shuttle, a freaking space shuttle, was supposed to launch out of there and do polar orbits.
It was like weeks away from doing that too.
Yes.
When Challenger happened.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Like, that's some alternate history there. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine? I can't. Oh, I wonder what, like, flying through the northern lights and stuff like that, you know, because I think there actually is a lot significant more radiation up there, isn't there? Isn't that one of the concerns of, like, flying?
Right. That's that interaction happens there because the magnetic field intersects Earth at that point. Yeah. 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 That would be crazy.
I'm guessing you wouldn't fly perfect 90 degree polar orbit. I'm guessing you'd fly. To avoid that, like, that death.
I don't know. No, at that point, you're in the DoD program, man. They don't care what angle you're flying. Listen, first of all, if you're going to talk about, like, safety of the crew, you ever tried to look up space shuttle aborts in a polar orbit? That's freaking crazy.
No, right, man. I already know that the space shuttle aborts, period, are crazy.
Right.
So
yeah.
I can't imagine.
Okay,
but you fly south, right?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Like, on the East Coast, we've got, like, oh, we'll land in, like, Nova Scotia or Spain or Africa. We'll figure it out. There's plenty of stuff down there. They're flying out. One of them was Easter Island.
What do you mean? Did you just hit it?
Like, I think that was like the main one. It was like hope that you made it far enough downrange to get to Easter Island.
I love an abort scenario that's like, by the way, I know your SRB is like totally leaking and shooting spraying fire into your external fuel tank. You're going to just have to ride it out, my friends, for 2.5 minutes. Jettison the SRBs. Now you're going to have to ride those RS-25s at like a 45 degree angle and pitch over until you target Easter Island. Like,
that's what I'm saying. Like, that doesn't make any sense. And people were like, oh, the SpaceX will never be able to land their boosters. But you were talking about landing a space shuttle on Easter Island. Like, what the hell are we talking about here?
Yeah, you're right. That's
insane. That's all I'm saying is they did not give a shit about what was going to happen to those people if they were launching out of Vandenberg on the space shuttle.
Here's a good, I want to talk about you, because I don't always get to talk, like, super nerdy with people like this. So here's a good question about, speaking of aborts, this is a hot topic, and I think I'm going to do a video about it. Starship is probably not going to have any true mechanical abort system, per se. Thoughts on that?
But it's just going to use its own engines to separate? That's the idea?
I mean, I don't even know. Think about how low a thrust-to-weight ratio that's going to be. Like, that's not, an abort is like, 6, 7, 8 G's. You're getting out in front of the shockwave. Like you have to get out of there.
Yeah, you couldn't make it far enough away from the booster if something bad was happening.
You're gonna be inside that shock. If the main booster explodes and ruds on the pad, I don't care what happens. You're not gonna have an abort. You know, it's lighting up those 7 Raptor engines on the upper stage of it is not gonna get you out of there.
Part of me is like, oh man, that's weird because of the context that we have, like, historically. The other part of me is like, they didn't give a shit on Space Shuttle. And the other part of me is like, I don't worry about that with my car. And that those things explode a lot more than rockets do. Like, there's a lot of crazy ass car fires I've seen. And I don't like have an ejection seat in my car because it's like reliable enough that it mostly doesn't happen.
You can open the door and leave when it's on
well,
fire.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
You can't really do that.
I'm just saying that, like, I don't know. I feel like we're colored by our context historically.
Yeah.
And they're banking on the fact that this is the moment at which that significantly changes, you know? So if that theory holds, then I'm like, yeah, I mean, the first 1,000 people are going to be crazy either way. So I don't know. I'm still conflicted about this ISS thing. I can't really even contemplate this.
my strategy with Starship is that we're on version 3 and there's, I think version 13 is going to fly. So I don't make any judgments on it yet.
It's true.
It's so far out. We have no idea. We have nothing to even figure out yet. It's too soon.
Yeah. My thoughts on this has changed a little bit. Like, people are quick to blame and point to the space shuttle, like, as like an example of why no mechanical abort is terrible. But I think that one of the big things with the space shuttle is it had three really bad flaws that made it so a mechanical abort was should have been way more necessary. And one of them is like relying on solids. I mean, you had to ride out the solids. That right there should have been like, okay, wait. We have this whole blackout period of like 2.5 minutes or whatever it is where they have no choice, no options really. So like right there, that's one. They should have had like an abort system for that. The other one is side, you know, hanging off the side of it.
Yeah, that was like a dumb thing.
That's bad. That ain't good. Ain't nobody got time for that, you know? So that was the other one. And then just the idea that like it has to glide to a runway, you know, and that it has to land on a runway. It couldn't land, you know, you can't just like with, you know, CRS-16, that 1050.1 booster. Yeah, that splashed down. But even if you were inside it, riding on it and it had a failure of the hydraulic system, you're going to survive. You'll be fine. You know, a space shuttle, if you don't make it to your destination, you're coming in, landing on an interstate in Orlando, you know, or whatever, like going 190
or 100
miles an hour.
100 miles short of Easter Island. That would be a good one as well.
Yeah, that ain't going to be, that's not going to feel good. Like propulsive landings, although they're inherently, I think, riskier and more dangerous. Like at the same time, they don't require a landing strip, you know, to at least have a soft touchdown. But that being said, I think, you know, so I've talked about this with a few people, and they say, you know, airplanes, jetliners that we get into every day, most of them, even the ones that are transatlantic, have two engines right now, you know, and they are reliant on getting you safely, on not having those engines fail. You know, I mean,
yeah, and they can do it on one of them, but they can't do it on none of them.
None of them. Well, and at least, you know, with none of them, it can still kind of glide and you can probably make a controlled crash landing and probably not die. But
unless you're halfway, you know, through a transatlantic flight and you're landing pretty much where the Titanic sank.
Right. Right. That's not going to be fun.
It's not good.
It's not going to be a good day.
There's one from Canada where that happened. Both engines went out and it had to land landed on a go-kart track, apparently. Like it,
that is a good pilot.
Yeah.
Wow.
That guy's better than Sully. Like, Sully,
I'll
you were good.
Can,
man, that dude landed on a go-kart track.
It was in
wild.
I think it was Gimli, Manitoba. Let's see if I can.
This crash. Jake knows how to Canadian history.
the Gimli glider. That's what it was called.
Wow.
Man, this is so good.
The dude from Texas in the chat nailed it.
Oh, yeah.
He had it before you did, dude. He lives
Mass
in Austin.
Fraction is an encyclopedia of all. Dang. Aerospace. So where did it land? It said it was
Gimli
from Montreal to Edmonton. Anyway, I'm gonna get lost. I'm gonna stop reading this because that's really bad podcasting, but the point is, yes, you need a runway to land.
And I think, you know, the idea with Starship is you introduce, you know, right now rocket engines are still fairly crazy, but the amount of data SpaceX has with the Merlin engine now, and like how many times it's flown, how many static fires, you know, at that rate, when you start thinking about in that context, and especially, you know, the new Raptor engine being significantly more reusable compared to a Merlin engine. You don't have like, you don't have carbon buildup and stuff. You don't have all these other things that will burn super clean. I mean, we're looking at a time where it's not going to take long for them to have more flight hours on that Raptor engine than any other engine, all other engines combined ever, you know, and developed to the point where a Raptor engine is going to be just as reliable as a commercial airliner's jet engine. You know, there's nothing in that system that's like inherently more unbelievable. Like, you know, we think of like rocket engines. Yes, they're low run. They run for a very limited amount of time compared to a jetliner that has to run for thousands of hours across a fleet of thousands for years on end. So there's data galore. But like inherently, there's not that big a difference between, you know, there's nothing more dangerous per se about a rocket engine than there is, you know, a jetliner engine, a jet engine. And I think once the fleet and the numbers come up and we just start removing some of those statistical anomalies, like a rocket engine might be just as safe as anything else. And you know, if we build them like an airplane and have fault tolerances where it's like we just have to build it to that standard, I don't see why it couldn't be as reliable as an airplane. I know that's probably what, exactly what they said about the space shuttle, but they also left millions of opportunities where it wasn't like
an airplane. Yeah, it was also politically compromised from day one and had several different stakeholders that were competing for what kind of design they wanted, and people working on the Titan program in the Air Force that didn't necessarily want it to work out, and so many things going into it.
Yeah.
This is a different beast. What do you guys think now? Like, because it has been changing so much. Did this last Dear Moon thing and then the stainless steel thing, did that totally sway your confidence? Or like, where are you guys at right now?
The stainless steel thing did for sure for me. I think Jake and I were maybe similar in that, like, all of the technical problems were so far out there that they had to solve that it was like, wow, this is a really big, long program, and it wasn't necessarily like going to happen tomorrow. And then the stainless thing happened, and you just saw all this momentum all of a sudden, and much more solvable problems, and much more short-term results that could, you know, that we're already seeing stuff being put together. And granted, maybe we didn't see some of that on the composite thing, but it just seemed like so many technical long poles in the old architecture, and this seems so much more achievable. So I'm getting pretty pumped.
Yeah.
Jake still doesn't know why we want to even send humans to space, though.
Yeah, no, I'm still withholding judgment on Starship. I need to see more. So yeah. The Hopper flight will help once they do that. But I feel like we're still going to get to a point where that flight's results are going to put another curveball into the design process, and they're going to have to make more changes. And I don't know. I just, like, I'm confident that they're going to, like, technologically, they're going to figure it out. I still don't see any other than vanity. Like, what's the reason to build it? Like, I haven't figured that one out yet. Like, why?
Really?
Why do
you
need that one?
Why?
Well, like, how many payloads are that big? Like,
see, I'm on the other side of this where I'm saying, so my thing currently, Tim, is that I think if they should just make it crew only and not even worry about cargo stuff, and that they super double down on this being a crew thing. But that's just me.
Yeah. But like, so hear me out. Like, and I don't mean that, like, I think the idea of sending people to Mars is awesome and I want to do it, but I don't think that they've convinced enough people that that's a good reason. Like, they're going to build it, and I don't think the government's not going to be interested, and I don't think there's any private companies that are going to be interested. They're just going to build it, and it's not going to do anything. Like, I haven't figured that part out yet.
I think you're wrong. I think you are...
Hit me.
Okay.
Sounds like a real Larry from Boeing, man.
A real what?
He's a real Larry from Boeing right now.
Where's your turtleneck? The thing that I think we're... Yes, I have had that exact same thought cross my head where I'm like, what payload is anywhere near 100 tons, that's anywhere near 9 meters in diameter, and forget even that market that doesn't exist today, because that could open up with, you know, some stuff might open up when, you know, a vehicle like that starts flying. Sure. Forget that, though. If you have a vehicle that is truly reusable, like really actually reusable, like land it and refuel it, you know, make sure, spray it down with WD-40 or whatever you need to do between flights and fly it again, I mean, this cost can come down tenfold, like easily, because you're just paying for fuel now, and you're paying for some inspections, You're paying for some pad time. You're paying for the tracking station and the blah, 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 the range safety officers, all that stuff. Your fixed costs are going to be the same on that. But the actual hardware costs are now almost zero, and they're being depreciated every flight or whatever. You know, you're amortizing the cost of that expensive vehicle hundreds of times or whatever. And so all of a sudden, even if they can lower the price in half, they can go from 60 million to flying even just a 6,000 or six ton payload, something that right now would fly in a Falcon 9, no problem. All of a sudden, if they can, they could literally charge half as much for that. Their market exists already just in the payload they're flying right now. And for them, they'll want to do it. They have the incentive to fly a vehicle that is truly fully reusable. Like, I think that is far and away, that is the way they're looking at this thing. They're screw the payload mass, screw all that stuff. I almost wish that they had pursued something more like New Glenn size or a little bit smaller. So the payload mass was maybe only like 20 or 30 tons, you know, like almost similar to their current fleet, just so people didn't freak out and be like, this is impossible. Because I think the fact that it is so capable and fully reusable makes it seem extra absurd. But technically speaking, they have the engines to do it. They have, if they know they can scale it up to the size and do all that stuff, why not?
Here's the thing I can't figure out. Oh, sorry, Jake. Do you want to go on?
Well, I was just saying, so you think they're just gonna fly it with like a bunch of excess capacity or just multi-customer it and then take the cost savings? Yeah.
I mean, they could. I think they easily could fly dual for a little bit, you know, dual geo birds for a little bit and save everyone some money in the process and then eventually gain confidence and be like, hey, you guys can start building like way bigger, heavier, cheaper, dumber satellites than these lightweight things you're building now. Here you go. Just save yourself some money. We'll put it up there. No big deal. We'll change the market for you. Instead of your payload, you're now limited to your satellite can only weigh 30 tons in geo. You can put a whole like, you know, you can put a whole giant building up there, whatever you need to do.
So on that, I have two things. One, New Glenn has already started to do that. We already saw there's this Harris Corp deal that they have with Blue Origin where they're going to build antenna that can fit, that are bigger than they could fit in current fairings, but can fit within a New Glenn fairing. So that is happening a little bit. As we see a bigger size happen, there are at least certain companies that are like, oh, we could do something cool with that. So that is a point in that direction of saying like, market currently is responding to size changes.
I'm from Iowa. If you build it, they will come. It's like a...
But here's the thing I can't figure out. What is a Starship cargo trajectory to Europa? You fly the whole damn thing out to escape, and then you turn around and you burn back? Or we get a little kick stage? What do we got?
Kick stage it.
So what are they going to do there?
Right?
50-ton kick stage and a 50-ton payload.
They could get there fast.
I mean, yeah, the possibilities are endless. You could put it on a highly elliptical, you know, like basically where it's just hanging on to a thread of Earth's gravity so it can easily make it back. And
that's like the Zubrin wants to do that with, I forget what he, I think he was talking about Starship when they were originally talking about that. He was like, no, the way to do this is keep the thing in Earth orbit the whole time and send one habitat. And he was like doing his whole Mars Direct via the Starship thing. So that's definitely, there's some people out there that think that, but I'm just trying to figure out like, everyone's like, oh, Starship could fly like 9 Europa Clippers. And I'm like, but how? Is the whole thing going?
Oh, yeah. Right. I wonder if it has enough. Think about this. Now, someone would have to run the math on this for me. If it has that big a payload capability, could it do, you know, a small Europa Clipper size payload, do the actual injection burn, have enough, let go of it, have enough velocity or enough delta V to turn around,
cancel the burn,
get back,
cancel the burn out? Like, I would love to see those numbers. Who knows? Because what if that was a possibility? That it could do the freaking injection burn and cancel itself out and come back. Now, that would be nuts.
Who's the dude from The Martian? What was that guy's name? That steely-eyed missile man from The Martian? Remember who I'm talking about?
What,
the trajectory guy?
Glover? Yeah, but the guy that slipped... Yeah, but I forget what his name was in the thing.
That's just called Donald Glover, hell no.
He's fake Mark Wallace, that's what he
is. Well, right? We need Donald Glover to get on the SpaceX team immediately to figure that out.
I think we're kidding ourselves if they don't already have that guy on staff. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Oh, the people that figure that stuff out.
Rich Purnell.
Yes. There it is. That makes me think of Archer for some reason. Isn't there a... No, I know why, because Chris Parnell Not Purnell.
Yeah, not Purnell.
Chris Parnell plays a voice on Archer, and now I'm all confused and sorry.
Ev Williams is the Twitter guy.
Full circle. There he is. Oh, he disappeared.
Jake, should we talk? Oh, you prepared a segment for us, Jake.
I did, yeah. It's the surprise segment that isn't really a surprise if you've listened to the show at all.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
So we do a lightning round.
Not the name anymore.
But it's not the name anymore. It's called the Terminal Count now, I guess.
Mm-hmm. 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 But it's in particular, it's very incessant that we name it Terminal Count.
Tim, do you want to participate in the Terminal Count?
Duh.
Good answer.
Duh.
Okay.
Prepare yourself, though.
Prepare yourself.
Oh, no. Okay.
These get spicy. Okay. So
the first ones, you'll think the first couple questions, you'll be like, I got this.
Okay.
Okay. So we always start with a calibration question just to make sure that we understand how the game works. So T minus 10 is when DM1 docked to the International Space Station, what nationality was the first astronaut to enter?
I don't know who entered. I didn't.
His name was David Saint-Jacques.
So French? I don't know.
French Canadian.
Canadian.
Yeah.
Hey, Jake, how many arms did he have?
None, because he had a can of darm.
Yeah, we don't like arm jokes, okay? We take our arms very seriously. Okay. T-minus 9. Of the 7 days in a week, which
Canada.
Is... of
is that
the seven...
how this goes?
Not how this goes. No, they're different now. Of the 7 days in a week, which is the best to be an astronaut on? You're the only guy I know who's an everyday astronaut. So.
Oh, Lord.
Every day is the best day. Is that the answer?
That's the answer for sure.
Is that how this is going?
Yeah. I told you the first couple, you'll be like, oh, I get it. And then it takes a turn right here.
Okay, T minus 8, Starliner or Dragon? He's so stressed out.
Now he's trying to find, like, there's a third answer that's the right one.
Lightning round. What is it?
It's Dragon because it's now, baby. We're seeing it Dragon. This year. Yeah, I've got to be excited for what's now. If we're looking forward to Starliner, guys, celebrate what's happening now. Jeez,
got it. I love that answer. T minus 7, Boeing spacesuit or SpaceX spacesuit?
Ooh,
a little conflict.
Are there names for the spacesuits? Do they have names yet?
I don't. Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to kneel you with that one because I think you've worn one of them.
He's worn the Michelin Man one.
Boeing's. I have to say, I'm a really big fan of Boeing's suit itself. I know it doesn't. Actually, these days, I almost think the suit itself might look cooler, believe it or not. It's actually a really good, tight fitting suit, like really well done. The SpaceX suit on someone's body that isn't like a mannequin.
Not good.
Looks kind of
weird. Yep.
But that being said, the SpaceX helmet twice as cool as the Boeing helmet. So. I think it's like put the SpaceX helmet on the Boeing spacesuit and you got a real winner.
All right. Okay. Follow up question at T minus 6. Which one's better to pee in?
I pee in everything I sit in. So Boeing spacesuit.
All right. T minus 5. Favorite place to eat on the Cape?
I still think my favorite place to eat at the Cape. I don't know why. It's such a stereotype. I do love me some grills. It's right there in Port Canaveral. It's like the end of the, it's like the last restaurant of the port. They have these really good fish tacos, a cool little like tiki bar. You can just watch boats come in all day. I like that place.
Is that where we ate, Anthony? I don't know where we ate.
That when we went to lunch over there?
Yeah.
Mm,
it was on the water.
Yes, it was. Yes.
Yeah.
It's probably not even that good. I'm sure locals are screaming at me right now like, that's the worst place.
Oh, that was a really commanding desk punch. That was awesome.
I have no shame in hitting this thing.
All right. T minus 4, Ripley or Starman?
Ripley. Power to women. We need more women.
Love it.
But Starman was, he had a convertible.
He did. That's that was cool. I would rather ride Ripley's ride than Starman.
Yeah,
it's not going to lie.
Starman had a convertible, but Ripley doesn't give a shit.
Starman's dead. Ripley made it back to Earth. So.
T-minus 3. Once commercial crew is flying, will Soyuz get better or worse?
As I think this might be like almost the beginning of the end of Soyuz, because they've had some issues lately. Ever since Rogozin kind of like took care of it and all, or whatever he's doing with the program, it seems like we've had booster problems. We've had leaky Soyuz craft. One of the most reliable rocket and spacecraft in the world is starting to slip. And if all of a sudden their only monopoly revenue stream is starting to slip up, I'm nervous that unless it gets taken over and something totally changes, I could see this be the beginning of the downfall, which would be a huge shame because I'm a huge fan of Russian spaceflight. But lately, they maybe this will be a good point. I'm going to say it's the beginning of the end, though.
Ooh.
Agree. All right. Hard agree.
Or the Soyuz. That's not saying that they might not flip and do something cool.
Hard disagree. The Russians have never done anything interesting in space. Only the Soviets have. Continue with the lightning round.
Just throws down. All right, T minus two. Follow up. Who would win in a fight, JB or Dmitry Rogozin?
Wow, that's a layered question.
I like that one.
Is it possible to beat a Russian in a fight?
I don't think so.
They're scrappy. I feel like they play by
a big
slightly
dude too.
Different set of rules. I feel like he grew up probably in the streets a little bit.
I think everyone in Roscosmos is an ex-KGB agent. I think I read that somewhere.
I think, well, isn't Rogozin literally an ex-KGB agent?
Probably.
Like, for real.
Probably are, yeah. Well, he's like boys with Putin, who is, so that makes sense. Is JB on Mountain Dew before the fight? Nailed it.
All right.
Rogozin.
Rogozin, all right. Probably true. I mean, JB is also like a fighter pilot, though, isn't he? Like.
Yeah,
probably like seen some
exactly.
shit, right?
That's the point.
Probably like gone through. He spent a couple days in a gym before, right? Like he's yeah, okay. All right, last question before launch, T minus one. The earthy zero G indicator. Is it actually around or is NASA just lying to us?
Wait, is it actually around? Like
is it round? Yeah.
Is the plush toy round?
Yeah, or is NASA lying?
It's flat, dude. Are you kidding me? Did you see the images? Did you ever see two sides of it at once?
I mean, you
could
can,
you
can,
ever
you
see the backside?
I've never even seen it with my own eyes. I haven't seen it with my own eyes. How can you prove
a mirror? Why wasn't there a mirror behind the plush toy to show that there was a backside to it? Because I just only saw two dimensions of it.
This is a shitty lightning. It's all my fault.
I love it.
Okay. Oh, I love it.
Good, good sport. You want to do some picks, Anthony?
Mm-hmm. I sure okay. do.
All right.
I can lead us off.
Do it.
The Planetary Society has recently added to their website these awesome mission pages. Did I steal your pick?
Nope.
Okay, cool.
But it was my second choice. So
okay,
I'm
cool.
Glad
yeah,
did.
they're awesome. They're great. Like you, so it's kind of weird to get to on their website, but you go to like, what is it? Missions and then space missions. And then they have like trending missions for the missions that are doing some cool stuff in space right now. And it's their collection yeah. of like, here's the latest things that have happened. And it's pretty rad. So if you're like traveling for a week and need to catch up, or you hypothetically have had 3 to 4 sleepless nights in 1 week, like one of us on the show here, and you need to catch up with what the Beresheet lander's doing, you just go there, check it out. They got them all posted there and it's awesome.
Wait, you can easily catch up on the Beresheet lander? Cause that's something I need to do.
Yeah. They got all the updates. I mean, as easy as it is to do, which is sometimes tough.
What's this called? How do I look it up?
Go to planetary. Here, we'll do it together. Go to planetary.org, and then go to explore, and then go to space missions, and then up the top, there's trending missions.
Look at that.
Wait. I missed the space missions part. Is it a sub-tab of the thing?
Yeah, hover sub-tab over explore, explore, and then the third one down.
Space missions. There we go.
And then it's pretty much
oh wow,
Jason Davis just working hard.
That's amazing.
Jason Touché. Davis is a national treasure.
He is, man.
That's great. This is fantastic. Okay, that's thank you.
Boom.
And
that's
thank
a
you,
space
Planetary
pick
Society.
Right there. Yeah, I didn't do any of the work.
So
don't
bad.
Thank me.
All right. Tim, you want to go next?
This is going to be, you know, when like, this is going to be the equivalent of being like, guys, I saw this awesome movie. It's called Apollo 13. You know, like, and something that happened a long time ago. I finally listened to Artemis on the way down, like Andy Weir's book, Artemis. That was phenomenal. I know it's probably been out for years now. Like, I don't even know when it came out, but I'm sure everyone's like, I read Artemis 9 years ago, Tim. You're way behind. But for me, that was like a really entertaining read. And I hear they're making it a movie this year, which makes me very excited.
Hmm.
So, yeah, it's about a moon. It's about going to the moon. It takes place on the moon. They have this really cool storyline. Like, they have a legit, like, tourism and industrial operations on the moon. It just seemed very feasible and a typical Andy Weir. I say typical because I only know The Martian, so I don't know any of
the two other Andy Weir's.
Yeah, totally typical Andy
guys
Weir.
Two books, yeah.
Like all of his other work that I've seen once. But at, you know what I mean? Like, at least, like, it was very feasible. It's very, it's a world that he created that is like, this could exist. And that was awesome. He did such a good job. It was very entertaining. So this maybe just as a friendly reminder to check that out if you haven't, but that was my space pick.
I love the one thing from
that reminder.
Why you didn't read it?
I haven't read it yet. And I think this is like the third time it's been a pick on this show. So I think
look, you're nailing it, man. The thing I loved about it was the currency was solid landed goods, right? It was like,
yes.
your currency was a kilogram or something to the lunar surface. So like, yep, you could trade somebody to get orders on the next flight. Yep. And the other thing I really liked was that he was like, Kenya, that would be a good spot for a spaceport. It's like, yeah, because sometimes I just look at the world map and I'm like, where would be good to launch to space from? And there's very few spots, and that's a good one.
That was, yeah, that was cool. And just how that like changed the country of Kenya too. Like, that's really, he did a great job. He's got an imagination on him. It's really cool.
So I'm going to geek out real bad right now. I'm going to give a pick that's literally a science journal. So the Science Journal Astrobiology just put out a special edition. And I can actually, I'll link it to right now in the chat. But basically, they've been running, NASA's been running this program called Basalt. It's a space analog mission. So you send some fake astronauts out into a lava field somewhere. You have a fake mission control and you do a whole, it's like LARPing. That's what our buddy Lars in the chat always likes to call analogs LARPing. It's very much LARPing. But they've been working on this for like 4 or 5 years. They've done 3 missions. Some of them have been in Idaho at the Craters of the Moon Park, some in Hawaii at the Volcanoes National Park. So all these kind of lava fields. And they just released basically all of their findings. So science, operations, engineering, all the kind of bits and pieces. They're just trying to answer the question of how the hell do you do an EVA on Mars? Like, what do you, like, what are we going to do? What is the procedure? And they've been studying it for so long, and it, all the papers hit in one special issue. And so you can kind of go read all the bits and pieces if you want. There's a good summary article from the PI of the mission, which is Darlene Lim. She's Canadian. Shout out for that. And then there's actually an intro to it written by Stan Love. The astronaut Stan Love, so who's also a planetary scientist, and I guess he participated in it. So he kind of writes an intro, and there's a summary, and then 12 science papers about all the different bits and pieces. So if like you really want to geek out and be like, what does an EVA look like on the surface of Mars with all the time delay and communication problems and getting teams to work together and making science actually happen in a way, like most EVAs we do today are basically fix the outside of the station. So you know, we don't have
right
a ton of
right back into that rant.
Yeah, right back into that rant. EVA to fix the station. This is an awesome deep dive. So it's not for the faint of heart. I mean, the articles are human readable. They're just chock. They're just chock so full of information that it's like you got to like go in tactically, read a couple pages, go and think about it for a while. So yeah, so I'm pretty excited about it. I've done I think 3 of them so far. I got to keep going, but. It's really cool.
That's awesome. That's I take mine back?
You can add a second one. I won't let you rescind one.
I have a second one. Apollo 11.
Yeah.
Do you guys see that?
I haven't seen it yet. I'm trying to find like a real IMAX to go to because I don't have one like super close to me.
Too late. You missed it.
Really?
I think it's like out of IMAX already.
1 week. It's done.
Well, that's
got to watch it on a. You got to watch it on a peon regular screen now.
It was some unbelievable, though, wasn't it?
Like, so I thought it was really interesting because of like the narrate, like there was no narration. It was just like, it was like a super cut of footage, right? Like that's all it really was. The thing that stands out for me though, was the launch sequence was out of this world. I have never seen Apollo, like Saturn V footage like that. Like I was, my mouth was hanging open. Like it's worth that.
Well, the funniest thing, two things stood out to me was the launch sequence thing. And the shot of the engine where you actually realize that it's covered in that thin tinfoil, basically, and the asbestos. Scott Manley just did a video about it, too. I never had seen that. I never had realized that. How did I not notice that on any of the footage I've ever seen before? I never noticed the like foil that wraps around the F1 engines. Mm. Like, that blew my mind. And then number two was, I didn't realize Bruce McCandless or whatever, how do I say his name?
Yeah,
I didn't realize he was in Mission Control and like on comms during Apollo 11, and then he was the first person to do the untethered EVA.
Yeah, he was like the one of the very few shuttle pilots that was in a shuttle astronauts that was an Apollo pick.
That was crazy.
He was a veteran when shuttle launched.
Yeah, I really like that guy though. He's a handsome fellow back then. Man, he was a good looking dude.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Yeah. So that's my other pick. My space
good
pick.
Bonus pick. Good bonus pick.
Thanks. Thanks.
Cool. Now I'm just like, why didn't I get to go see it? Now I'm a little mad about it.
I had to drive down to Florida to see it, so don't feel if you want to know the level of commitment. I didn't go for the launch. It just happened to be a launch down there when I was driving down there to see an IMAX film. Yeah. So
did you go to that big IMAX over in Orlando? Point Orlando?
No. No, we went to one. There's actually one in Merritt Island in this like rundown mall. Yeah. And it was, the theater ended up being fine, but like I can't believe they had an IMAX there. I thought we were going to, and actually we thought we were going to at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Center. They have an IMAX there. So totally went there, like went straight to the IMAX thing, like this is the first thing we'll do. And then they're like, yeah, no, we don't have that. We're like, but it says on the app. I don't know.
The one first in Orlando is one of those IMAX ones that's like, so tall that it's almost square. You know what I'm talking about? It's like ridiculously weird looking.
And the theater seating's at like a 60 degree slope.
Oh my God, it's so steep.
Climb a mountain or descend a mountain. Yeah. I don't like those ones because you end up having to crane your neck, or especially those, have you ever been in a curved IMAX?
Yeah.
Screw that.
I only go to movies that I've seen a bunch in those.
I saw Interstellar like that. And you know how a lot of those shots of dialogue are like really tight? It'll be like one person here, one person here. Yeah, their faces were like on opposite sides of the room. So you're like, huh? It's so like disorienting.
I only do those ones if I can get the back row seats. Like that's the only time I'll do it because you're far enough away that your field of view is reasonable.
I did not know that.
We sign off, I meant to do this at the start, but you are having a meetup this week. Or is that next week? 2 weeks?
It's in like, as we're recording, it's in like a week. March, St. Patrick's Day, March 17th.
Oh, right, because you almost did it at an Irish pub.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So last year I did it it was March 18th last year. It was the day before the Lunar and Planetary Science Conference, and so it was fine that I held it in the bar outside the hotel, which is an Irish bar. But now that day falls on March 17th, which means it is not okay to have a meetup in the Irish pub on St. Patrick's Day. So it's in the lobby bar now. But if you're in Houston and you want to drive up to the weird, wonderful, bizarre, not real town of the Woodlands, Texas, you should come hang out. March 17th. Events.offnominal.space has all the information. So yeah, I would love to hang out if you guys are around.
Man, I think I've been to the Woodlands. Is that the one that has like a fake little downtown?
The entire thing is fake. It's made out of cardboard and sticky tape.
I've been there. I think it's kind of charming, like kind of cute.
Have you ever been to Universal Studios? It's not too different.
Yeah, it just is all like
ripping this place.
God. I mean, I don't mind. At least it's not just like a Target store and then like some like multifamily home and then
dude,
that's
like,
it.
We rent Airbnbs when we go to this conference. Like you rent like an entire McMansion, you know, for the week, and it's like $900 or whatever, and you put 10 people in it. And so I'd like get up in the morning on like a weekday and go for a run before the conference, and there's no activity. Like, why aren't people going to work? where the kid's waiting for the bus, where someone walking their dog. It's empty. And it's like, you know, in The Walking Dead where they dress up like a set, they take like a neighborhood, they just put leaves on the road. And then it's like, yeah, it's now, you know, it's abandoned. That's what it looks like. But instead of leaves, it's like that Houston, like pollen moss that like clings to everything in Houston. That's what it looks like.
Is it like anyway. Spanish moss?
It's just, it's pollen. It just floats around. And then, cause it's a swamp.
So but, yeah, great. Let's definitely go to Jake's meetup. That's positioned it precisely in this town that he's just described as a horrorscape.
As a wonderful place with floating moss.
Our one listener in the Woodlands, like I'm unsubscribe.
Our zero listeners in the Woodlands.
Yeah, I don't think anyone actually lives there, so I'm not too concerned about that one.
Well, luckily, luckily, I have rave reviews of the Woodlands. So if you need to come on over to my content, if you feel ostracized now by Jake's comments, feel free to check out, you know, youtube.com/everydayastronaut. I won't make fun of your town. That should be my goal. Like, thanks everybody. That does it for me. I'm Tim Dodd, the Everyday Astronaut. I won't make fun of your town.
Unlike that Canadian asshole, Jake Robbins. Jake, I was about to tell him to plug his stuff and he just nailed it. Like that was so professional. We have a lot to learn.
Like how to do video. Everything
except apparently drink and talk about space.
We got that one under control.
We nailed it.
You guys nailed that.
We're crushing it.
Of all the like podcasts where you drink and talk about space, this is definitely
number one.
Easily.
God, how many are there?
Actually, Amy Shearer Tidal used to do one where they, it was a little bit, I love Amy Shearer Tidal, so this is, I'm not going to go on.
You're not going to go full Woodlands on town. Her.
Yeah, I'm not going to go Woodlands on her.
It's because she's Canadian, right? Is that why?
She is Canadian.
Yeah.
But she would do a thing where I think she would like have beer and talk space and punk rock.
Whoa. Like, that's even like more niche punk than I thought we were.
So that more niche. And I thought that was a potentially confusing for her audience, who most of the time is probably 65-year-old men from like the Apollo and Gemini programs, you know? Being like, why am I talking to this guy about, you know, punk rock? Like that, you know, her vintage space. Like she's definitely like been the champion of vintage space. So I think a good portion of her audience probably is not a similar demographic to those in like the ska punk rock scene. But
that's a solid assumption based on the Boeing video we saw earlier.
But I don't know. What do I know?
Jake, you got any parting words for us before I hit this outro music?
Dude, I think we nailed it. I think we got it. We got DM1 under control. I think we know where the best places not to live in the United States are. I think we got some good beers. Tim, thanks for coming and hanging out with us. This is awesome. Hey.
My pleasure. Let's make it a regular thing. I'll pop in anytime you guys need. Anytime you guys are like, hey, we need to spice things up. Let's bring that.
We're going to get Larry from Boeing, and that's definitely going to have to be the next show we do together.
Oh, God. Are we going to call this episode Larry from Boeing and just continue to confuse people?
Sure are. Yeah. That was actually the third one on my note. I'm not even lying. No. I can post a screenshot right now of this. Bye, everybody.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. End of test.